This is Making Better Decisions. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan. Decisions are where rubber meets the road for organizations. Each week, we'll be learning from people who are on the front lines of turning raw data into better outcomes for their organizations. This show is sponsored by Canopy Analytic, helping companies make better decisions using data. Today's guest is an expert with 20 plus years of experience in knowledge strategy, information architecture, and information findability solutions. He's the author of the award-winning book, The AI-Powered Enterprise, and is a sought-after speaker, author, and influencer. Additionally, he co-hosts the Early AI podcast. Please welcome founder and CEO of Early Information Science, Seth Early. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here, Ryan.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. Thank you for coming on. So I want to jump right in because you kind of have a brain full of information that I want to hear about. So what is the one thing you wish more people knew about using data to make better decisions?
So that's a pretty broad question. And I think the best way to answer that is to begin with the outcome in mind. So understanding what the business is trying to do, what its objectives are, and deconstructing that to finer and finer degrees of granularity. Because if you just say, well, we want to increase sales, we want to reduce costs, that's kind of ambiguous. That's kind of meaningless. So we have to say, exactly how do we want to do that? What are all the supporting business outcomes that will support that? That's a big picture, you know, outcome, but there's other things such as increasing the customer base, the amount of customers, the customer base, increasing the share of wallet, right? It could be a lot of other things. It could be, you know, expanding the sales force, whatever it might be, building new marketing campaigns. So there's lots of elements that go into that big picture objective. And then when we look at those elements, we have to say, well, what processes are now going to be needed to support those bigger objectives? And then within those processes, we need to deconstruct those processes to understand who are the users, what information do they need at each step of the process. So I think a lot of times, you know, people are attacking problems, big picture problems with tools, right? Rather than getting to or starting with what is the most important thing to the business itself, and then who are the players involved and what do they specifically need? I talk about information leverage points, meaning where can you get the biggest bang for the buck when you have a new piece of information or a more accurate piece of information or you have information faster, right? What's going to help you with your processes and your downstream systems? And so having that place where you say, oh, here's a pinch point. Here's a critical point where we have some kind of a blocker or we're not able to make the decision quickly or we have to go through too many manual processes. Understanding those points are what's going to give you the biggest bang for the buck. I think the other thing is making sure that you're measuring your outcomes. So starting with baselines and making sure that you're tracking against those baselines. So I think that it's kind of I would also say, so that's kind of motherhood and apple pie, right? I think the other thing is starting with a good semantic architecture and data architecture. That's a critical piece because a lot of folks think that the technology will take care of that. And as you know, having the right foundation is really critical to any tool, technology, or business process.
Wow. Yeah. Couldn't agree more. I mean, I think first off, I love that term information leverage points. That's a good one. But you know, what I really heard there were two big categories of things. Number one, data is just a tool, right? So if you don't know why you're breaking out a socket wrench in a given situation, it's just kind of like, you know, you're not going to be driving nails with it. So I think there's this idea that a lot of people have like, oh, we're going to do data. Mm-hmm. Cool. Love that. Why?
Mm-hmm. We're going to be data driven. What does that mean?
Yeah. Right. What are we doing with that? Yeah. So it's really about what is the business strategy and then how can we use this set of tools to get there?
And very the other piece, nice and very precise points. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, great. I mean, I think the other thing that I would love to dig in a little bit more, I mean, in a non-technical way, is this kind of marketing promise from you know, every vendor out there of like, just use our stuff. You won't have to think, like, there's no code, there's no effort. You're just going to like plug it in all your places and it'll be magic. And it's like, you know, in like the least technical way possible, help our listeners know, like, what is a semantic model and why should they care?
Sure. So I think, you know, the other misconception that I didn't mention is that people will think that the tool is all they need, right? And start off with, okay, we have this problem. Even if I understand my process and my business objectives, now we're going to apply a tool to it. And the problem, of course, is that, you know, it's the data that is critical to leveraging the tool. If you don't have the right data, if it's not in the right structure. What happens sometimes when we say semantic architecture, that means that there could be a term that's used in different systems that has a different meaning, like sales. That is always a great example. How are you defining sales? At what level of granularity, et cetera? And is it net sales? Is it gross sales? What is it? And then the other is that you can have different terms that mean the same thing in different systems. So you can have the same thing, same term that means different things. You can have different terms that mean the same thing. Mapping those together so that you can disambiguate, right, the two terms that have different meanings, where it's sales, net sales versus gross sales, right? Not sales. Sales is too ambiguous. And then being able to map together those, disambiguate those. But also when you have retail sales and, you know, gross sales, and those are really the same thing, mapping those together. So in one case, we're splitting them apart. The other case, we're mapping them together. But that overall is the semantic architecture. When you have all of these entities representing in different environments and different tools and technologies. And that's always the case. You know, I read a thing the other day that said that it had related to AI and it said that 46% of executives admit that they have a data problem. And my response to that is the other 54% are in denial.
First,
you have a data problem.
You know, I think it's like, you know, in these big manufacturing places, it's like, what's the acceptable amount of metal, like metal shavings in your frosted wheat? And everyone's like, surely zero. Yeah. And it's like, unfortunately, that's a non-zero number, you know? So like, even if you spend every waking moment, you know, there's something that could be improved with the data. So it's really about focusing on, you know, kind of Pareto principles or whatever you like to do to prioritize and just focus on like, what are the problems we're trying to solve? And then how can we use what we have to get there? And I think you did a really good job. I've never actually heard anybody explain the concept of a semantic layer as cleanly as that.
Thank you.
You know, that's the business logic
as well. So
yeah, me too. You know, but it's that's where all of your business logic lives. And the idea that some vendor off the street, I don't know what your sales cycle with them was, but like the idea that they understand every single morsel of your business as well as you do. And on a technical level that allows them to translate it with 100% accuracy is like, you know, so that actually leads into, you know, a really interesting area that I would say you are, if not the specialist, at least a specialist in. And that's, how do we go from talking about something like a semantic model, which is just, hey, this is, we put all of your business logic into a layer so that the tool works. How do we go from that to talking about something like information architecture on a larger scale?
Sure. So information architecture is just what it sounds like. It is a structure for the content, the data, the knowledge in your organization, in your enterprise. And just like if you were building a house, you wouldn't just start, you know, digging the foundations and pouring concrete. You would start with an architecture. You'd start with a plan, right? A foundation plan. And then you have all these other representations of that house. So you're going to bring in an architect, or we're going to at least have architectural drawings, and maybe they'll modify them to suit your needs. But the idea is that you have multiple representations. There's a framing plan. There's an HVAC plan. There's a plumbing plan. There's an electrical plan. There's all of these different levels of granularity around how you represent that house and how you design that house. Same thing happens with a data or information environment. You need to have things like wireframes, you have to have use cases, you have to have metadata structures, you have to have content models, you have to have renderings, you have to have all sorts of different things that are very analogous. So information architecture is looking at all the different ways of structuring that content, data, and knowledge so that it can be used by different systems and different processes and ultimately consumed by humans, right? At the end of the day, a human needs to do something, a person needs to do something. So we need to have interoperability between the different systems on their own, right? Because we don't want to do manual ETLs. We want to do transformations and spreadsheets and so on. So we need to have those things mapped together so the systems can talk to one another. And then we need to have a way that people can interact, whether it's, increasingly it's a chat or conversational interface, but that's not everything. Obviously, you still need to be able to navigate. You still need to be able to search. You still need to be able to retrieve. You still need to be able to run different scenarios and different queries. So all of this requires that we have that comprehensive view of the information sources in the organization. We understand the quality of those information sources, and we understand the structure and architecture of those sources so that we can build those interfaces. So that's kind of a broad view of what information architecture is. It can be on a very focused level, or it can be at an enterprise level.
So I have a couple things that I want to dig in to on that, but there's one thing that you said that I just can't let pass without us addressing. And it's something like I couldn't agree more with, but if somebody else hears it, they might write it off. You said, because we don't want to be using spreadsheets. Why don't we want to be using spreadsheets?
Well, they get lost. They pile up. We don't use the right naming conventions. We don't know what the right version is. I'm not a spreadsheet jockey, so I don't know the details of how it can, but they can be very complex. I've used spreadsheets in terms of financials. They're snapshots in time, essentially, right? This is a continuum. This is a movie, right? And you're taking a picture with a spreadsheet, and that movie has to continue. So one of the reasons is that, again, it's not giving you a real time. Of course, you can build in connectors and you can build in real time, mechanisms. And it's not as friendly. It's not as flexible as other types of tools are. And this is not my space. But my point is that when you have tons and tons of spreadsheets, they get lost. They're not named correctly. It's hard to find information. It's hard to get what you really want. They're not a user-friendly interface. So I think that spreadsheets are, a necessary evil in a lot of organizations, but you really need to say, well, why are we not querying the system of record, right? Mm. Why are we going through this intermediate process with this spreadsheet? It's not the real deal. It's an abstraction from something else.
Yeah. Yeah. I love all of the awesome hit points there. I mean, to put it simply, as someone who cut their teeth as a spreadsheet jockey, it's painful and it's manual, and then if I get hit by a bus, I guess we'll just rebuild that business process because I was the only one that understood the inside of it, and I love connecting what you just talked about there with this idea of, the semantic model, which, might be, it's definitely a fancy term. Like when I want to sound smart, I talk about a semantic model, but.
Oh no, if you want to sound smart, talk about n-dimensional free space vectors.
There we go. I'll go with that. Yeah. I think that when we talk about, hey, we are going to invest some time in information architecture, we're going to make sure that our business logic is clear. The thing that to me is the most valuable about that is that we're doing it in one place. Mm-hmm. No matter what, that's happening throughout an organization, right? Unless this organization is just like blindly flying by the seat of their pants and doing everything on gut, which some people do, and some people do really well.
Yeah, you'd be surprised, Emily.
I know, but if the organization is doing even the very basics of like generating a financial report, right? Like how much money did we make, right? You are absolutely already doing this. You're just doing it in individual cells in an Excel spreadsheet that somebody else can't follow, that you're going to forget, that it might break. What happens when Excel decides that that number's a date for the 10th time this week, right? You know, then you can get into a tough situation where something that you're relying on to make a decision about your company is unclear. To me, it makes sense. Like, hey, if you're just willing to take the time and the effort that you're doing over here, manually wrangling this information, just do it once over here, and then it works for everything and everybody gets to use it.
Right.
That's the paradigm shift. Right. That's it. It's stuff we're already doing.
Yeah. And that's a really great point that whether you're doing it or not, it is a difference between, you know, an accidental information architecture and an intentional information architecture. You're doing it because you're just by the nature of analysis, you're naming things, right? You're organizing things. You're labeling data, right? Labeling data is metadata. We need a reference point for that so that everybody labels it in the same way. If we don't do that, then we have chaos. We have confusion. And as you say, you know, somebody named this thing in this weird way in this spreadsheet here, and they named it in this other weird way in the spreadsheet here. And you only know, you know, the people who know where the bodies are buried are the ones who can figure it out, right?
And
it is not a good way to run the business, obviously, because people leave and et cetera, the proverbial bus hit. But I think that it's recognizing that you have to do this in a very big picture way to begin with. And that's called a domain model. And a domain model are the big organizing principles, like customers. What type of customers do you have? Products, what kinds of products do you have? Processes, right? Solutions, document types, you know, all of the entities, account charts of accounts, right? All of the entities that are needed to run the business. And then those are the big picture pieces. And then what you do is drill down to define like all of your product categories and your product subcategories and your attribute models, and all of those things get defined to meet certain use cases. And that's the critical piece here, is that everything has to be driven by a use case. People will start to build models, data models. And I give this assignment in a class that I teach. I get to teach, I should probably teach it again, but it's saying, hey, I've come up with a data model for this patient, right? Or for this, oh, I know what it was come up with a data model for an invoice, right? Then they would start adding more and more pieces to this invoice, but it was really a document. And the point here is you only needed so much information in that document. What they ended up doing is rebuilding the accounting system in the document management system. Whereas all you might need are, you know, name, address, you know, the list of the services or products, and then a link to the accounting system, right? Because the boundaries of those systems are so important. So the point here is whenever people want to ask for more metadata, more data points, more, you know, more details, you have to say, is there a use case? Do you have a use case for that? Because if you don't have a use case, you can't have it, period. You don't have you can't have it.
It can get out of control.
It can get out of control, but people will say, well, I want to plan for the future. That's fine. But what are your prospective use cases? You would leave. You can't do everything just in case, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, especially as, like I said, as I, you know, former recovering spreadsheet jockey, shall we say, I totally get it. Like, I was one of the few people, you know, my first company that really had access to the source systems. Like, I could get in there, I could get anything that we needed. And that access was restricted to just a handful of people. And then people would have to come to us with like a use case. And I think kind of the old school model of IT of data was that it was like an IT function, and that it's like a ticket. Like, it's not a value add. This is like a cost center type thing. And people will come with requests, and we're a modern data driven business. We should be able to answer them. And it's like, okay, well, putting that mess to the side, people kind of had this situation where it's like, okay, well, this is my one bite at the apple. So mm-hmm. I'm going to ask for everything for all time and all the columns. Because mm-hmm. if I have to come back to you again, I'm going to have to wait in line with another ticket. Mm-hmm. And I think that mentality just like continued. People are so used yeah. to this like very, I personally view this like kind of old school, like manufacturing waterfall IT mm-hmm. cost mm-hmm. center mindset. You know, of like, I only get one bite at the apple, so I'm going to try to get everything that I can so I can do my job in the future without needing to interface with other people.
Right.
Which kind of speaks to like a deeper breakdown of how some organizations right. view data and probably, you know, even IT and analytics yeah. and all those things. But
yeah, they probably didn't go through that exercise of truly understanding yeah. the needs of the business. And then the business doesn't always know what questions to ask. Right. They'll ask for broad sets of data, where they'll ask for things yes. that are ambiguous, but then you have to work with them to really deconstruct. Well, what are you really trying to do? Right.
Yeah.
You don't need all that. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Usually what I found was when somebody wanted something like that, it's because they were hiding like a manual process under the hood somewhere. And I was like, hold on, why don't we just make your life easier? Why don't I just like automate you something that shows up on your desktop every morning? They're like, you can do that. And it's like, all right, now you got a convert, you know? Right.
You don't know what's possible. That's the
point. Yeah. So when we were talking at the tail end of the spreadsheets, you mentioned it in a way that once again kind of gave me clarity. You were basically saying, okay, well, we know that we're doing this. We're just doing it in the enterprise way that we're trying to do everything else. And that hit home for me, right? I obviously had to have my little therapy session there about the Excel spreadsheets, but that really hit home for me, right? Like this information architecture stuff, data strategy, this is stuff that is happening within the organization, yeah. whether we want it to or not. Yeah. We're just going to try to take an enterprise approach to it, and we're going to try and tie it to our business strategy so that we can realize ROI.
Yeah. And the dollar side of that, you know, when you have a large organization, as you start to think it's scope creep, you start to think you're trying to boil the ocean, but there's a way that this can be done where you're not getting too granular. It doesn't mean that everybody needs to do the same thing, right? It doesn't mean that everybody uses the same taxonomy, for example, right? There are different, I mean, there may be a product hierarchy for retailers and for the retail market for consumers, and another hierarchy for brand managers, for example. Right? It doesn't mean everybody has the same thing, but you have to be intentional about the differences. The point here is you're trying to have a reference point for the most critical things, the most common elements across the organization. So, you know, you don't necessarily want to do a big top-down master data project, but you want to be able to harmonize those use cases and the data architecture decisions that are made at the departmental or business process level. And you want to be able to at least have a coherent framework for integrating that. So a lot of times we did this at a large insurance company, and whenever people had a new project, the gating factor was, what are you going to use for your data architecture and your information architecture? What are you going to use for taxonomies? And then if they were saying, well, we're going to start with a clean sheet, it's like, no, step back a minute. Let's look at what you really need to do. Don't need to start with a clean sheet. Or if you do need to start with a clean sheet, there still has to be connections to the larger picture. So there's a way of balancing that so that it doesn't become cumbersome.
Yeah, I love that, because that's, I mean, I think particularly in my space, so in my company, we focus a lot on the faucet that all of this stuff comes out to the end user in, right? With business intelligence and reporting. Mm-hmm. And there is this kind of like narrative of the, you know, quarter, half, $750,000 infrastructure project that like, you know, doesn't get finished. You know, it, you know, whatever, right? You get like a quarter or two in, and some new executive comes in and is like, we're paying how much for what? Like, you know, I focus really, really heavily on exactly what you talked about. Like, what is the use case? Mm-hmm. How does that tie to the business strategy? How are we going to use this to realize ROI? And then what's the 20% that'll get us 80% of the way? Like, let's start realizing that return on investment as quickly as possible. Doesn't mean infrastructure is bad, but it also doesn't mean infrastructure is good and we should just like dump all of our money into it, right? It's a balancing act. It's a tool. Mm-hmm. you know, I don't need to start buying up Home Depot locations because I want to be a contractor.
Right. Make the punishment fit the crime.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. So one of the things that anybody who reads your stuff hears about a lot is a knowledge graph. Uh-huh. And I think it's a really cool concept to uh-huh. get shared with the audience. So sure. can you tell us a little bit about like, what is a knowledge graph and what's the use case?
Sure. So the idea of a knowledge graph is a mechanism to connect together lots of different data sources and many times unstructured content with structured data. The way it does that is by sharing attributes. So when you begin, everything in my mind begins with a descriptor of something. And again, what are your products? It's the isness. This is a product sheet or a specification sheet. What is it about? What's about this particular product? And then when you have 1,000 of those things in a pile, how do you tell them apart? That's the aboutness. If I have 1,000 contracts, what kinds of contracts are they? What piles would I put them in? Well, this is a work order type of a contract. This is a real estate contract. This is an employment contract. Mm-hmm. And then what are the other details that will identify those? So when we start thinking about all the different buckets, that domain model I mentioned, the big picture organizing principles, what we can do is start defining the relationships between them. So we start off with the vocabularies that define that entity. And then we start saying, well, what are the services? If we have a services hierarchy or list and a product hierarchy list, what are the services that go along with this product, right? In order to install, what are the support materials that also can be used for this product installation? For example, if I have an individual role, what are the interests of that role? If I have any type of, say, an industrial product, what are the environments in which that industrial product will work? And what happens is you're creating this relationship between all the different taxonomies that describe the different big picture, right, buckets and the relationship between them. So an insurance company might have regions and they may have risks, then they'll have risks in a region. So that's called an associative relationship. It's part of a thesaurus. It's a C also in the back of the book index, right? Why do you want to see it? You want to see this particular aspect, right? It's a very finely defined C also, okay? I didn't want to see it. You want to see it because these are products and these are the services I might need. Or here are solutions for this particular problem. And what you're doing is you're building this knowledge scaffolding. You're building these big buckets of information, the details behind them, and then you're building the relationships amongst those elements. And what this means is that you have the ability to come into a data source and you can do things like faceted search, right? Which is a typical kind of example where you're saying, well, again, if you walked into a Home Depot and said tools to the guy behind the counter, he'd say, well, what kind of tools do you want? Yeah. Right? Yeah. Hand tool, yeah. Power tools, right? And so that's giving you those dimensions of what that information is. And what you can also do is use it for product recommendations, right? You can start to say, well, what are the types of products that are appropriate for this individual with these characteristics? If somebody's wearing a painter's hat and they have a hat and it says Joe's Painting and they have splatter all over them, you can infer that they want painting supplies, right? Or they, and so what you're doing is you're saying, based on the characteristics of this individual, I think they're going to be interested in these things. When we map those things together, we can use it for stuff like product recommendation. We can use it to put context into content when we're asking questions of a chatbot. And what happens is when what we're building, when we build those relationships between those big buckets, those big organizing principles, that's essentially an ontology, right? A taxonomy is a hierarchy, a list of parent and child type of relationships, whole part. You know, Boston is a city in Massachusetts, which is a state in the United States. So there's that parent, child, whole part relationship. And then we have equivalence terms, which are, you know, Boston is called Beantown, right? And then you have associations, right? Where, you know, the Freedom Trail and other types of things are related to that city of Boston. When you have all those taxonomies and all those relationships between them, you have an ontology. An ontology describes the domain of your world. So if you're a pharmaceutical company, it's drugs and generic drugs and chemical compounds and mechanisms of action and cellular targets or biochemical targets, processes, all of those things. That describes your world of pharmaceuticals. That's the ontology. Then when you add the data to that, when you let that ontology be the infrastructure, the scaffolding for the organization, and then you add the data, now you have a knowledge graph. Now you can use those relationships that you define to get to specific information. IMDb, right? The movie database is a knowledge graph. But you say, who are the actors that were in this movie? Okay, what other movies were they in? Right, who are the directors? Okay, what other movies did they direct? What other act? That's how you play 6 Degrees from Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. So I had a secret motivation for asking you about knowledge graphs. Anybody who is listening to that would know, you know, that you definitely have some experience with product information, right? So I know that that was a big part of your business for a while, but now that, you know, AI and generative AI is, you know, big in pop culture and a lot of people are talking about it, it just so happens that the things that you described right there are kind of a prerequisite for AI doing anything meaningful within an organization, like going from any type of kind of very generalist generative AI into something that can really effectively and accurately answer questions about a specific domain or a specific company, it requires what you're talking about. So tell me a little bit about that.
I don't want to explain how LLMs work, but I want to explain how LLMs interpret the query and then they interpret the results to make them more conversational. In between, we can retrieve from a knowledge source or a data source in the organization. That's what's called retrieval augmented generation. And what's really important about that is it reduces the likelihood of hallucination. When you are going from a, and the beauty of LLMs is not necessarily asking them for the answer, even though the LLM contains a representation of knowledge and an understanding of concepts and relationships, what you really want the LLM to do is make the question and the answer conversational, but use the organization's knowledge, use the organization's data source. So the things I talked about in terms of knowledge graphs provide additional signals for the LLM. They provide the reference point, the context. When you add metadata to your content and ingest it into an LLM, those become additional signals for that mathematical representation of the knowledge, and it increases the accuracy. We did this with a pharmaceutical customer, and we found that with that metadata representation, that isness and aboutness, that data architecture, that content architecture, we went from 53% accuracy to 83% accuracy by including the metadata. So the metadata provides context. It provides context for who the user is, right? Because just like, you know, what role are you playing? Oh, I'm a painter. Therefore, you need painting supplies, right? And being able to represent those different roles in the organization with those associated attributes, that's an employee data model or a customer data model. And then what you're doing is you're using that to provide context for the retrieval of information. And that is the knowledge architecture, knowledge model. And so again, what a knowledge graph does is it has the representation of all of those entities, of the products, of the content, of the users, of the processes, and that allows you to more precisely leverage the LLM, the ChatGPT type of AI application, or getting at your corporate content.
That is super cool. Now. All this and more, Seth puts the knowledge that he's acquired over a long time in a lot of places and makes it pretty freely accessible to a lot of people. So
thank you.
Before we get into telling everybody where they can connect with you, I want to give everybody the opportunity to know who they're connecting with a little bit. Tell me a little bit about you know, who is Seth outside of work?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So I have been a big fan of physical activity. I work out and do boot camps. I also like martial arts. I do that's my black belt certificate on the back of the on the wall there. And I've been doing Shotokan for about 40 years. In fact, I have a video of myself 40 years ago. And I wanted to put up a current version of that at some point. But I've also recently started to do Aikido, which is a lot of fun. So a lot of, you know, boot camp, martial arts, those types of things. At my age, it's a little bit tougher because you can't go as hard as you used to. And
yeah.
And I forget my physical limitations, but it is what it is.
I don't know, dude. I bet you could still beat me up.
let's try to avoid getting into that space where we need to prove that we're not.
Yeah, here's hoping.
Yeah.
I love it.
I also have some animals. I have three dogs, which are
Hobbits,
and they're wonderful and lots of energy. And I have two cats, which are Bengals. And it's very cute to see the Havanese and the Bengals play together. And, you know, Sabrina loves Simon, and that's her buddy. And, you know, it's just really great to watch them all together. That's all.
I love
my wife likes, and I like to travel. And we also have what's called a Thundercat boat, which is a small racing catamaran. It's about a 14-foot boat. But if you look at Thundercat Racing online, you'll see these things in the water. I did a little bit of racing, but that's not my space. I was competing with two guys who were the national motorcycle racing champions. Let's just say they're a little too aggressive for me, right?
Yeah.
They're invincible. I'm not.
That's pretty wild. Yeah. I love it. So tell everybody where they can learn more. I mean, you dropped the seeds of entire fields of knowledge here. So where can people learn more about you or connect with you?
Sure. Well, go to www.early, and that's E-A-R-L-E-Y. Don't forget the E before the Y. I should have bought the early.com domain, E-A-R-L-Y, and I probably would have gotten more traffic, but E-A-R-L-E-Y.com. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm just Seth Early. Just one word, E-A-R-L-E-Y. I'm also, I have more personal stuff on Instagram, but that's Seth.Early. I'm a little bit on Facebook, but not too much, but really LinkedIn and the website. You can always send me a note, Seth.Early.com, if you want to talk shop or catch up, or happy to answer any more questions and perform.
And I also will recommend, I mean, the website is a great place to get linked out to both of these things, but if any of the knowledge architecture stuff was interesting to anybody, I would recommend Seth's book. And he also puts on a lot of cool seminars where he'll bring in. That's right. Yeah. He also does podcasts, of course.
Yeah.
But I would recommend going to Seth's seminars. I try to attend every single one that I'm available for. Yes. Here's the book.
There's
the AI-powered enterprise.
And then, the webinars, you'll find out those on the website, the podcasts. Then I do some speaking, some public speaking, some conferences, some keynotes. I do paid keynotes.
You're all over, man.
So, yeah, I'm starting to slow down a little bit. So
that's good, man. You've earned it, man. You've put a lot out into the world for other people to eat.
I write for MS Wire, for Customer Think magazine, other places. Anyway, so lots of stuff.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Thank you, Seth, so much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it really was. This flowed. It was so easy. It was so much fun getting to pick your brain. And it's knowledge that I think is more interesting and useful than ever, even though old wine in a new bottle. Thank you to the audience. If you guys learned something today, please tell someone about the podcast. Thank you, Seth.
Again, thank you.
And this has been another exciting episode of Making Better Decisions. That's a wrap for today's episode of Making Better Decisions. For show notes and more, visit makingbetterdecisions.live. A special thank you to our sponsor, Canopy Analytic.
Canopy Analytic is a boutique consultancy focused on business intelligence and data engineering. They help companies make better decisions using data. For more information, visit canopyanalytic.com. There's a better way. Let's find it together and make better decisions. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week. Peace.